presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream Podcast is Takeda. Thanks, Takeda. Hello, and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast, our flagship episode for March. Today is March 16th, 2020, and I am Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm Natalie Lynch. Happy almost St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
When you have a disability, you're basically like the other to everyone. And it's sort of like a superpower because everyone has felt that way.
Today's interview guest is Zach Anner, a comedian, actor, and writer who has quadriplegic cerebral palsy and who seeks to both entertain and enlighten through his work. Zach first made waves in 2010 when his submission to Oprah Winfrey's Search for the Next TV Star competition resulted in his receiving worldwide attention, and ultimately Zach's winning the contest, granting him his own show, Rollin' with Zach, which debuted on OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network, in 2011. Zach's YouTube channel, which boasts over 375,000 subscribers, is filled with hilarious and sneakily philosophical content, such as his high-intensity fitness series, Workout Wednesday. I promise, these videos are unlike any fitness videos you've ever seen. Zach also hosted a show for Soul Pancake exploring religion called Have a Little Faith, which you'll hear him talk about in just a little bit. Can I be honest? It was a strange day, the day that Zach and I met for the interview. It was last Wednesday, not that long ago, but it was the day after the NBA postponed its season and the president announced a European travel ban while my wife was flying across the country. Things had just begun to feel really real. I rushed out of my place after a day of corona-related calls and emails, not as prepared as I wanted to be. And as I drove past Staples Center on the way to Zach's, I passed vendor after vendor out on the streets still hawking Kobe merch. I thought, man, that feels like forever ago. I forgot pieces of my equipment at home. I started having issues with other elements of it. And within about 10 minutes of meeting Zach, I was embarrassed. I felt bumbly and unprofessional, and the negative self-talk started ramping up pretty quick. But as soon as we turned on the mics and Zach started telling stories and sharing his perspective with me, it did not take long to lose myself in Zach's genuine and hysterical storytelling. Zach's book, If at Birth You Don't Succeed, is available right now. In fact, the audiobook, read by Zach, is queued up in my Audible playlist as I record this. And after you hear the interview, I wouldn't be surprised if it was queued up in yours as well. So that's coming up in just a little bit. But first, clinics are getting a major modern facelift by startups seeking to simplify health data collection and to empower the patient along the way. Did you know about that? That's why we're here. It's coming up momentarily as the subject of our Like segment brought to you by Natalie and I and a special guest. Ooh la la, who might that be? Hard to say. Big mystery. That's not that big a mystery. That segment is coming up right now. Happy Bleeding Disorders Awareness Month. Our Like segment this month comes to us from Genentech. As you know, the Challenge Accepted show is their exciting web series hosted by magician and comedian Justin Willman. I like those two things hand in hand, magician and comedian. Although I kind of feel like in most cases, most magicians are comedians, or at least think they are or try to be. It doesn't always go the other way around. Challenge Accepted shines a spotlight on members of the Hemophilia A community as they work alongside celebrity coaches to overcome their everyday challenges and get outside their comfort zones. In the most recent episode, host Justin Willman, you know, that magician and comedian, challenges Damien, a high school baseball player, to think quickly on his feet no matter what hemophilia throws his way. Guest starring professional hockey coach, different sport, David Quinn, who also has hemophilia, that's true. Episode 7 is on YouTube right now, and you can find it by going to YouTube a little bit later after the podcast and searching the phrase Challenge Accepted Show. You got to use all three words. It's a really heavy lift. Challenge Accepted Show, or you can click the link in the program notes. So we're lucky this month joining us here for the Like segment is none other than Ask the Expert host Amy Board. Hello, Amy.
Hello. I am so excited to crash your podcast party.
Welcome.
Yeah, I don't know if it's crashing if we welcome her in. Is it still crashing if we
allow
her?
No, but she wants
here?
To crash it. So
I do. I want to crash it.
Thanks for crashing it. So Natalie, what do you have for us this month?
So this month's Like segment is from thehill.com, and it's titled, These Startups Are Innovating the Future of Healthcare. Story at a glance, there's these new companies that are trying different solutions for healthcare issues. You can get your body scanned at a kiosk to keep track of your numbers. There are new clinics popping up to streamline the patient experience with the help of technology. And while none of these companies solve all the problems in healthcare, they're changing the way you can seek care and providing innovative solutions.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff. So what exactly are these things? You said some kind of body scans?
So the first are these kiosks to monitor your health. So there's two companies right now, Heiji or Heiji, and Emport.
Okay.
And Heiji's website, their tagline is, know your numbers, own your health. So, you know, just like at the pharmacy where there's the freestanding blood pressure cuff. I remember as a kid, I loved that too. Like I always used to run over there. My mom's like, get away from that. Come on.
Not a toy.
And I'm like pressing the buttons. That's kind of what these look like, but they're far more high tech and they scan the whole body. And height, weight, BMI, body fat percentage, your inches around your bicep, your waist.
It looks like they're wheelchair accessible too. I'm looking at a picture of one of them right now.
They're they're really beautiful too, right?
Yeah, they are.
So you can then keep track of that data. And it's kind of like when, what's that, like Redbox where you could rent videos at I feel like it's now you can own a piece of your health in a very quick and convenient way.
And sort of like the Redbox is outside of a 7-Eleven, like not a typical place you go for entertainment rentals. They're putting these in
Rite
Aid,
grocery stores. Yeah, and the websites have, you know, find one near you. And it looks like they're really out there right now. Like I opened the map and it seems like all over the United States.
I got to be honest. I don't know, Amy, if you've ever heard of these things. I'd never heard of them before you presented us this article.
Well, I think it sounds like it's a system or a new technology that's in line with what's, you know, slowly been the trend over the last couple of years in healthcare of preventative care and knowing your numbers, knowing when perhaps there is a flag for concern so you can go in and prevent something like heart disease or diabetes. You know, some of these, you know, chronic illnesses that really could be prevented. And so it sounds like it's just another cool opportunity to do that without going in and seeing a physician and the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. And also just knowing your baseline, like what are you normally? So if you then go into the physician and they're like, oh, this is high, and you have, you know, Heiji numbers from the last 22 grocery visits, you're like, this is actually kind of where my numbers hang out. So that's kind of an interesting thing.
Absolutely. That's a great point. But so 22 visits to the grocery store, you get your Heiji numbers. Is it costing you a lot of money each time, or how does that piece of it all work?
That's my question too. Does it cost anything?
So on the Emport website, I was able to find information, and the basic metrics seem free. Height, weight, BMI, and then if you want the more interesting, like all the inches. And
like inches of my bicep if I'm tracking growth?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, if
don't
you're,
laugh, Amy.
You're starting to do weights and...
Not
and
starting, been doing it for a long time.
Been doing it.
Amy?
Oh, okay. But yeah, we can watch it. We can watch your biceps grow over time, Patrick.
Thank you, Natalie.
But that's for like $49.95 a year or something. $50 a year.
Okay.
And that's then you have access to like all these other, like it's like My Health Chart and stuff like that.
And you mentioned up at the top that there's other kind of versions of this that are also taking place?
Yeah, so there's these standalone clinics that are popping up. One's really popular in New York. It's called CityMD, and it's an urgent care that's using technology to kind of streamline things.
Hmm.
And, you know, if you have a gunshot wound, you're not going to go to CityMD. But if you have the flu or a respiratory infection or an ear infection or strep throat, there's also pediatric x-rays. So if your kid fell off the playground, you thought they broke a bone, you don't have to go sit in the ER because the wait time at CityMD is 8 minutes. So
8 minutes.
8 minutes. And there's 100 locations in the New York area. So
I'm sorry, did you say, is this only in New York or is that where it started maybe?
It's in New York, New Jersey. I don't know if it's spread, but
maybe it's piloting out of there.
Yeah, I think that's where it started. And then there's a new clinic for general practice, and it's called Forward. So it's really, like looking at the pictures, it's really, really beautiful. And if you go to their website, there's a little video and it explains that there's no, you don't see a waiting room because there's no wait time.
That's great.
So you go in and you check in check in on an iPad.
Oh, fancy.
And then your doctor walks in and he has this little scanner to like put over your arm to find a vein. So there's no digging around for veins, which I know is a plus in this community.
Very into not digging around for veins. Very into that.
And there's not a health insurance model for this. It's a monthly membership fee of $149. And 30% of the people who go to Forward are uninsured. So it's if you don't have insurance but want access to healthcare, this is a really cool option and affordable option. Well, for most people.
Relatively speaking, yeah. Amy, when you hear about this, what do you think people in our community, how could they benefit from these kind of services? To the point Natalie made about if you had a gunshot wound, you're not going to go to the Rite Aid to check out the Higi machine or go to you're going to go to the emergency room. And if you need care for an inhibitor, you're going to go to your HTC. But how could you see people in our community making use of these kinds of services?
Well, I guess I keep thinking about, you know, the concept of medical homes, you know, where you kind of go, where you trust, where everything lies. And for our bleeding disorder community, obviously that is the HTC. But for things like the flu, if you have a sinus infection, if you have a UTI infection, you just need, you know what you need, you know what, you just need to be diagnosed, you need to just get care or antibiotics really quickly, and you can't do that at the HTC. And so these services that are slowly popping up, I think, are a great option. I think we all know in the bleeding disorder community that insurance is very tricky. It's difficult to see what is covered and what isn't. And with these types of services, if you go in and ask the right questions, a lot of times you're paying for your visit upfront. So it's not an insurance situation. It's not you pay a $30 copay and, you know, the actual cost of the visit, you know, is on your insurance. This is you go in, you pay upfront. This is what the visit will be, whatever it is. And
right.
I think there...
No surprise billing to worry about.
Absolutely. There is lovely transparency in that. I do want to say that, and this is an issue that has been, it was rampant in Colorado when I left last year, that there are some services that are popping up that they're called freestanding ERs, and they don't go by that. They kind of look like urgent cares that do have a surprise billing mechanism because they do take insurance. And so to ask questions going in, I think, is just great advice for everybody in this type of situation, because technology is starting to assist us to access in the healthcare realm, which is great, great, great. But we just have to be really careful, especially when it comes to insurance. That's my only thing. And I'm such a bummer when it comes to these things.
No, it's so true. It's so true. And actually, we had an experience last month where Natalie and I unfortunately had to rush to an emergency room for a dog-related injury, and everything is fine. But I have to say,
injury on me, not the dog.
An injury on you. Yeah, the human was the one who was hurting. Dog was fine, but we didn't. And I take full ownership of this. Like, I didn't know where we were gonna go. Like, in the moment, it was the moment. The crisis struck. I didn't know where we were going to go. Didn't know anything about insurance in that moment. It was like, oh, I'm ill-prepared. So to your point about, like, it may look like an urgent care, but it's actually a freestanding ER. And if they accept insurance, there might be some back-end problems. You need to be ready for those things before the crisis strikes. So learn from my mistakes and know what your plan of attack is.
Well, and the difference, too, between assessing is what I'm facing right now emergent or urgent,
you know? That's a good,
if it's emergent, you go to the ER. If it's urgent, like, I can't, like, deal with this cold anymore, or, you know, I sliced my finger washing dishes on a knife, but it's not, like, bleeding, but I think I probably need a stitch or something.
Yes.
And the ER a lot of insurances tend to have a big copay just to walk in the ER, so you're spending $350 just for being there,
right?
Where these urgent cares, a lot of times it's just the 20% copay, and it's not, and you've waited for a long time. So I think these are cheaper and quicker options for things that aren't emergent.
Yes,
you know?
Great point.
And then one more vertical of these new innovative clinics is woman-focused gynecology. And what's cool about this is it started as an online place for women to find health information, and it's turned into these clinics, and they provide gynecological services as well as other health assessments and acupuncture and seminars.
So Amy Board, thank you for joining us, and let's see, next week is the next two-part episode of Ask the Expert. What's going on with Ask the Expert next week for March?
Several things. We have a really cool guest. We have a teenager in our community who has von Willebrand's disease, who has started his own website, Live Smart, Play Smart, to honor Bleeding Disorders Awareness Month, and the fact that the Teen Impact Award submissions are open. And as a reminder that the Adam Lynch Scholarship in Your Brother's Name is being launched. And so we have a teenager who's going to share his story and remind us all that sometimes experts are not what we seem.
And Amy, thank you for joining us here in the Like segment. Natalie, great job as always, delivering some key pieces of information for the bleeding disorders community. And we'd like to thank, as always, Genentech for supporting the Like segment Challenge Accepted show on YouTube. You got to use all three words, Challenge Accepted show. And thank you again to Genentech. Did you know the Bloodstream podcast is made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda? That's true. Visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more about Takeda's commitment to and support of the bleeding disorders community, but not yet. First, enjoy my interview with the hilarious and heartfelt humanitarian, Zach Anner. So you've been here 6 months, you said?
Yeah.
But you're not a downtown.
Maybe longer than that. When I first moved here, the Alamo Draft House was not open.
Okay.
And it was very sad. It was I was like, why am I downtown? And then the movie theater opened, and I was like, I could go to movies every day, and my life was better.
Did you?
The Draft House was my movie theater of choice in Austin, and it was like just such a drought not having one out here.
Sure. How long were you in Austin?
12 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. What years were those?
Those were, 2005.
Okay.
To 2017.
That sounds right.
Between that, although I did come out to LA once before to shoot
for work,
another show I shot a couple shows for Soul Pancake, Wayne Nielsen's thing.
Yeah. What was that show?
I did a show called Have a Little Faith, where I explored different world religions, and it was just sort of like getting a sense of someone's faith and their own personal story about why it's important to them. We weren't doing any judgments or anything. It was just sort of like, oh, this is what being a Muslim means to you, or being part of the Baha'i faith, or being a Buddhist.
What led you to that interest? Have you always been interested in religions?
I'm interested in people. I'm interested in what people believe in and what they care about, and I'm interested in meeting people that I never would have the chance to meet other than like making a show about it and finding common ground. Because when you have a disability, you're basically like the other to everyone. And it's sort of like a superpower, because everyone has felt that way.
How do you mean?
Like, everyone feels like the feeling of being the other is universal. Like, everyone's had those moments where you're like, nobody understands me, nobody has gone through what I'm going through. And I've always sort of, at least in my adult life, understood that everyone is struggling. I just have the very, I have a unique set of circumstances, in that the things that I would most want to hide, I have no option. And so that's, in a way, is a gift, because it sort of forces you to be more honest.
You said a couple moments ago, in my adult life, and this does sound like an incredibly grounded perspective, I take it you didn't always have this point of view?
Yeah. Growing up, what we always had growing up, even when I was, a frustrated, petulant kid, was my family always had a sense of humor about things. And sense of humor is the best bridge to empathy that you could possibly have. So, like, when we were, like, We were very poor growing up, so we would always just sort of make our own fun by like watching Monty Python and then putting on our own versions of the sketches, you know? Like, so I feel like that in itself, and learning how to funnel struggle through humor, it's been like the best thing for my life and career. I would recommend it to everyone. I don't understand how people can go through life without laughing. Utilizing humor when you're stuck. Like, and you can either be pitiful or funny. Like, those
those are the two roads
you can
go. Those
come up all the time.
Okay.
And I remember very distinctly, like, when I was, like, in a physical therapy session when I was 4 years old. Like, they were trying to teach me how to put on and take off my shirt. And I remember trying to take off my shirt, and it got stuck on my head, and I couldn't get it off. And so I just peeked out of the shirt, and I said, "I'm a nun." And that was like, and everyone started laughing. And it's like, oh, whenever I can't do something, I just have to figure out something that's funny about it and turn it into something that people can laugh with, rather than be like, should we help him? What do we do? Like, because if people know that I'm okay with all my stuff, with cerebral palsy or whatever else I've got going on, then we can start to have real conversations and break down barriers, you know?
Can you give people a top line of cerebral palsy, or at least your experience of it?
That's the thing about cerebral palsy. Like, it's actually, people always ask me what's wrong with my legs, and then I kind of just tell them it's actually brain damage that happens around birth. So it's basically cerebral palsy is a catch-all term. The type of cerebral palsy I have is spastic quadriplegia, meaning that all of my limbs are affected. And it can be such a range of things. Like, it can be my level of disability, it can be very mild, or it can be a lot more involved, where people, you know, have trouble speaking and they can't move as well as I can move. And then there are people going around with cerebral palsy that you wouldn't even see it, you know, when they're just walking down the street.
Sure, yeah.
So it's basically, I can't really even explain it, because I don't think anyone can.
So I'll offer another kind of perspective on that. As a camp counselor at certain camps, we would get, it was camps for kids that had different chronic illnesses, and we would get cerebral palsy, 14 years old, likes the Yankees. Cerebral palsy, 11 years old, he has shoes. And it was like,
so it was the condition and one thing that was interesting about that person, that was like your bios that you would go through?
Not always, but sometimes, because it
was
like,
he likes the Yankees and he has shoes. That's a different
because the social workers from these hospitals, like, sometimes they would give us a glorious amount of information, or the kid had been coming for 8 years and had a biography, but sometimes they would be like, cerebral palsy 12. So it's like, you can't, sometimes
you don't,
that's a kid
know
with an AFO.
What's coming with a cerebral palsy diagnosis?
You do
have
not.
No idea.
I have a couple of friends with spastic quadriplegic cerebral palsy, and I have been really interested in how we connect around sports and athletics, because while hemophilia is far different from cerebral palsy, and walking around to the point we were just talking about, people would not think that's a guy who's got severe hemophilia and bad arthritis. But we would always connect around sports, because we always, I don't know, shared a perspective of feeling, I guess, a little like the other. Has sports been a part of your life too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my memoir, I don't want to like name drop it, but
should name drop, like, it. That's it, why.
Yeah, I have a memoir called "If at Birth You Don't Succeed," and there's a chapter in it called "Game Changer." It's about my adaptive PE teacher, whose job it was in grade school to come and adapt all of the sports that everyone else was playing, and she would just make different rules for me, and you know, it basically made everyone else in my class think that I was like a cheating asshole. But it was also like the first most important lesson that I got in inclusion, because she was just trying to make me part of the game. You know, like when we would play basketball, like I could throw the ball into a trash can.
Right.
Like, or like when, like I can't really catch balls. So the rule was if someone throws it to me and it hits my chair, that means I caught it. And it was frustrating as a kid because like other kids would bully me about that sometimes. But then, you know, as I got older, I appreciate that so much. My adaptive PE teacher's name was Mrs. Fatta, and she would always be saying, like, you got to find a way to play. Like, and we, like, she just did so many amazing things. Like, when she introduced me to, like, adaptive skiing and stuff, and we would go to, like, the New York State Games, and it was like a little mock Olympics, and I won 4 gold medals for somehow coming in 4th.
Oh, congrats. That's funny.
I mean, yeah. So it was great. So I forget what the question was.
You know, the role of sports in your life. I mean, it's just interesting to me. I think people who face significant physical challenges, the attraction to overcoming them through sports and athletics.
And then, like, I don't, like, for the Workout Wednesday stuff, like, which is my YouTube series where I basically try and fail at different sports while shouting inspirational nonsense that's just jokes. That sort of came about, like, where it's like, I bet that, like, you always see those people on Facebook that are, like, giving you those inspirational quotes of, like, everything you do is enough, you're a 10, like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And like, I thought it would be funny to be saying those things and like, while running, like trying to run on a treadmill or, you know, like ride a mechanical bull when you are obviously not equipped to do those things in any like inspirational way. So like, the role of sports in my life is if, like most things, is it going to be funny if I try it? Because then it's worth it.
And it's worth it because of what?
I think it's worth it because if I can bring laughter and joy to people and just by showing myself to the world, you know, people can be like, oh, I can go out and do this thing and I don't have to be ashamed of who I am. And like that's the thing is like, I only think disability is a problem if it stops you from being who you want to be.
Do you ever feel burdened though to have a positive outlook or be particularly shiny on the outside world because of a disability?
Hell yeah. And it's, I feel like that's the inspiration porn angle that people with disabilities are meant to make people without them feel good.
Yeah.
And that's not where I operate. And I, like, people say that stuff to me all the time of like, how do you stay so positive? And my response to them is, editing. Like, you see me in 3-minute chunks, and if you can't stay positive for 3 minutes over the course of a filming day, then, you know, you shouldn't be doing that work.
So you name dropped your book, you mentioned a filming day, we've talked about your web series, you've been on Oprah, you've gotten a lot of interesting things in the entertainment world.
Yeah, I mean, yes, when I look back on it, I think I've had a lot of luck and a lot of great people in my life who have helped me get to that place. And, you know, like, once you get an Oprah bump, it, like, I was on the Oprah Network and won a show from her almost coming up on 10 years ago now.
Oh, boy.
And that lasted for about 5 seconds. Mm. But still, the impact that it's had on my life and career, I'm still feeling like the reverberations from that. My friend Christina Kuzmich and I, we both competed on this show together and won our own shows. I had wanted to do a travel show that highlights traveling with a disability in a fun way for a long time. And so I competed on this reality show and wound up winning it. And it was called Rolling with Zach. And then it was immediately canceled because no one watched it.
How was that? That must have been... What was that emotion? How was that experience?
I mean, when you're handpicked by the most powerful woman in television, it's pretty cool. And then when you're fired by her, it's not as brutal because it's not like Oprah calling you up and saying she doesn't like you. It's like some executive.
Right.
It was sort of that I had learned enough from the experience of having my audition go viral and having Reddit, you know, back it and get excited and then going and filming a travel show that it's like, oh, I can make things myself.
Mm.
And if I don't like the way that the mainstream entertainment industry portrays people with disabilities, like now we have so many outlets to tell our own stories. So it was like, I'm gonna make YouTube stuff and see where that goes. And, you know, from Oprah and going to like start my own YouTube channel and do my own travel show, it was like, oh, I know how to do this now because I learned how to do it from Oprah, which is it's like pretty high level people she works with.
How does the entertainment industry portray people with disabilities?
Typically, I tend to think the disability in entertainment, disability is typically portrayed as either these people are so inspirational, they're basically like superheroes, or they're objects of pity to make other heroes' journeys better. Like, oh, I met this. I don't know if they've ever done it with your disability. I met someone with a hemophilia and he just changed my perspective on life. But that's so often what happens with disability.
Like, just because they met you. Just because you existed in front of them for a moment and you were disabled.
Yeah, I mean, I've always joked that I feel like we'll really be making progress when we can show people with disabilities as flawed assholes. And,
yes.
You know, it really is just the disability experience is the human experience. That's what people should take away from it. Yeah. I'm sure you got a lot of that as a kid too. Like it was just like, he goes through so much and I don't know how he always keeps a smile on his face, but I don't know if you had any of that.
You know, I did, and it was interesting because it had more to do with, like, I was really fat as a kid for long, long stretches because I had hemophilia-related problems and immune problems, and I was really sick and putting on weight and on steroids, and then I'd miss a lot of school, and so, like, what's going on with this guy? So I kind of had, like, something around me, but it was because I was, like, fat, awkward, and not around a lot. It wasn't because of what was actually going on. So what was weird is, like, I was angry that my disability was invisible at times because I just wanted people to know, like, what was actually going on. It's like there's problems that you don't know about. You know?
It's a real gift to have it out in the open. I got to tell you, it really is, because to me, it's like, I know you're seeing this. So you're seeing what I deal with. Let's get it done with. I'm not going to, like, I can't hide this.
Right.
I have to incorporate it into the best life that I'm going to lead.
Also, I'm clearly in my 30s and this didn't happen this morning. So I've probably been around and know how to do life and you can relax a little bit and not have to like worry so much.
I don't know how to do anything in life. I'm still, I'm a hot mess all the time. Yeah, but what I've learned is that you never figure it out. It's disability or not, it's just a shit show.
Well, it might be coming to an end soon, so we may not have to worry about it much longer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like people say live each day as if it's your last all the time, but I don't think that I would change much. Like, most of my days are fine. Like, I think I would be fine with just an average day as my last day.
I agree. We've had too many extraordinary days this year. I wore my Kobe shirt today because I knew I was going to be driving through downtown and passing Staples. And there's been too many weird days in 2020.
And yeah, it's really does sort of, like with everything going on, it does sort of, either you can be in a state of panic and like nothing matters, or you can be like, oh, man, I really appreciate the little things. And I tend to be on the appreciating just the small stuff side.
So apropos of nothing we're currently talking about, you have had a lot of interesting jobs, but the one I am really interested to ask you about, were you a security officer for an amusement park?
I did. I worked for Disney World, but I was a park clearer at Epcot. And basically that was, I would welcome people in the morning, except the one time, like, because you get up really early, and I didn't know how to, like, fall asleep early. So I fell asleep on the job, and people, like, started entering the park. I was really the worst employee ever. And then the job of a park clearer, in addition to telling people to, you know, get the fuck out at the end of the night and have a magical day, is like you watch the fireworks within designated disability viewing areas from around the World Showcase. I don't know if you've ever been, but it is magical.
Well, I have seen the fireworks show, and I have had the privilege at times in my life where I've needed to use a chair for an extended period.
You've had the privilege of needing to use a chair?
For the disability access beautiful viewpoints, yeah, at certain ballparks and arenas.
It really is. I mean, if I didn't have a disability, I would probably still be using a wheelchair just for the fun of it.
Just for the perks alone. So you and I are about the same age.
Are we? I'm 35. How old are you?
I will be 35 this year.
Oh.
And I've been in LA since 2013. You've been in LA since
2017?
Okay, so I got
I came
few
to
years
write
there.
For Speechless. That's when Speechless started, I was going. I was like, oh, okay, I'll come out.
And how did that come about?
I was doing some work for the Cerebral Palsy Foundation, and they sort of got linked up with ABC and Speechless. And I found out through them that the creator of Speechless, Scott Silveri, wanted to talk to me about some stuff.
Hmm.
And I don't know how familiar you are with the show, but it's a sitcom about a family where one of the kids is a teenager and is nonverbal and has cerebral palsy. So it's a really funny show. Shouldn't have been canceled. It's great. You can watch it on Hulu. So he called me and was just like, apparently had watched like the Oprah show way back in the day. And it's like Speechless was his life story and his family. And he was like, but we want, you know, more stories that are authentic, and we want an authentic voice in the room. So my writing partner, Jillian Grassi, and I, we had written the book together. So we just like said, what haven't you used in the book? And so we just wrote like a 10-page document of just like things that had happened in my life that might be good for like a sitcom. And they wound up using stories for like 5 episodes or something. And then they flew me out and they said, do you think like you'd be comfortable in the writer's room? And I wound up writing for seasons 2 and 3. Had no aspirations to write for sitcoms, but it was the best experience. And I feel it's a testament to how great a person and a mentor Scott Silveri is, because now all I want to do is write for TV. I got to guest star in a few episodes too, which was crazy. Got to tase Minnie Driver, which was a lifelong dream.
Tase Minnie Driver.
Yeah, it was, you know.
Huh.
We've all thought about it. You know, I got to do it. No, she's great. She's
well
awesome.
Done, sir. Good for you. That's awesome. What was it about the writer's room that made it particularly exciting?
It's always wonderful to be surrounded by people who are funnier and more talented than you are. And so, like, going in, I thought, oh, I'm pretty funny. And then after seeing the way that they construct story and write jokes, is like, I'm not funny at all. I'm going to try and learn from these people. And it's just, it really was like a family. Like, everybody says that, and you could tell, like that's not true. But I love all those people. I was just looking, like, I miss them every single day. But, like, it was one of the best experiences of my life to be able to use everything that had made me feel different and ostracized when I was growing up and turn it into comedy that made people feel seen.
It also gives a different frame to the story, right? Like, sometimes I know I've had to kind of look back on my life and appreciate, well, at the time I experienced it this way, but I don't have to hold on to those feelings. I can now kind of have a different perspective on that event.
Yeah, it's like, no, like, and I do definitely think, like, art in itself makes it possible for you to feel like no suffering is wasted, no pain is wasted.
Yes.
And, like, being able to sort of be that voice that I wish that I had had when I was a kid, of like, things are going to be okay, there's a path for you, and to be able to, like, put that on TV and help, you know, make a really funny show that did that, it was just a gift. It was like, no, just the feeling that no pain is meaningless, and the fact that we just had really great snacks and games. We were always playing games. It was hard work. There were like 16-hour days and stuff, but they were all fun. And then I'm taking improv with Greg.
So that's actually what I wanted to go to next. Greg, what's something about Zach in class that stands out to you? What separates Zach from a lot of other improvisers?
Well, you know, Zach rolls in the first day. I think he comes in about an hour late each day, by the way. It's 3 hours.
Hour late. It's about what's going on. I'm an hour late to everything.
It's about a 3 hour class, and Zach, but whatever. He comes in, the teacher always says what we're doing, and Zach's reaction to what we're doing usually gets the class to laugh and quickly establish himself as the class. It's funny because we're all trying to be funny, but he's the class clown in the funny class. Like Zach mentioned before we started the podcast, that he's very loud. But a lot of times Zach will start out his sentences very quiet, or he'll get caught on a word, but then the next word is like anal retentive, and you know, just gets the class to laugh. But yeah, Zach is great. Yeah, and quickly establishes himself as smart, funny, creative, charismatic, and that was my first impression. That's why I wanted to have him on the show.
Oh, thanks, Greg.
Zach, this was awesome. Thank you so much for having us here. Where can people go to find more stuff about you online?
You can go to youtube.com/ZachAnner. You could check out If at Birth You Don't Succeed. That's a long book that, I mean, that'll take you. I did the audiobook, and it took me 5 days to record the audiobook, but it will only take you 10 hours to listen to.
There you go. That's only a few car rides at the end of the day. It's not that long. The guy put 5 days of work into it. Give him a sir. All right.
Yeah.
We'll put links in the program notes. Thank you, Zach, so much. And best of luck. Keep us posted if there's things that we should let the audience know about in the future.
Thanks. Yeah.
The presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream podcast is Takeda. And what's the website, Patrick?
Well, it's bleedingdisorders.com, Natalie.
Okay. If you want to learn more about Takeda and the many awesome things they do, go to bleedingdisorders.com.
And hey, thanks
Takeda.
Natalie, I regret to inform you, it's that time again where we have to say goodbye.
Aww.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
I hate this time.
Well, the good news is we'll be back next month with another flagship episode, third Monday of the month.
Yeah, but it's also, like, this is Bleeding Disorders Awareness Month, and so, like, I'm always sad for March to be done.
I know. Well, listen, there's still more time. They just aren't going to hear from us on this podcast.
But there's other podcasts they can listen to.
Check out the Ask the Expert podcast, Bloodstream Journeys, Cheat Codes, a Sickle Cell podcast if you're interested, or you can go back and listen to previous episodes of this. I'm sure you haven't listened to all 70-some-odd that there are, so there's plenty of content to go around.
Who are you?
Well, my name is Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm Natalie Lynch.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.